This is Kate Harness with 307 Net Radio, and today I'm sitting down with Steve Rasa from Johnson County Public Libraries. Hello, Steve. Hello. Are you?
How are you doing?
I'm well, and you?
Not too bad.
So I'd like to talk to you a little bit about libraries.
Sure.
There's been a lot of controversy, or controversy, depending on your accent, in the US recently about books and what books are appropriate, notably in school libraries, but also in public libraries. One thing that we do know is that this is nothing new. Since the 1600s, when Thomas Morton's Quincy Colony in Massachusetts had a book that was banned, a pamphlet that was banned, and then, of course, many people are aware of Uncle Tom's Cabin being banned in the 1850s.
Oh, yeah.
So there is a historical context. This is not a new debate that's here, but today, it does seem as if libraries all across the country, and we're aware of that as close as Gillette and Casper, and then as far afield as New York, are being criticised and even being told what books they may shelve or may not shelve. So
sure.
I'd just like to sort of discuss with you really what's happening in Johnson County about that. So let's get down to sort of the basics. In Johnson County libraries, who decides what is going to be on the shelves?
The short answer is me. The long answer is myself and the board. So to give you an idea of how it works, when we order books, we put together some lists. I have a children's staff person who looks through various brochures and magazines and websites for what children books are hot, which ones are popular, which ones could be intriguing, and puts together an order list for those. And then I have a teen librarian who does the same thing. For those books, myself and the assistant director do the books for adults. But really, if it came down to questions of whether books should be in the library or not, then by our policies and stuff, that's up to me and the board. So that's the short answer.
So you mentioned in the children's sections and the teen sections, do those two individuals or yourself as Johnson County Library Director and so on, do you liaise at all with the school district about what happens here or there? Do you have, are librarians, professional librarians there too? Do you have conversation?
The only real discussion we have is when the award-winning books, the Indian Paintbrush books, come up, because the school district, of course, does their Battle of the Books, I think it's still called, with the Indian Paintbrush award-nominated books. And so we do the same. We try to carry those same books so that the kids have an opportunity to read them both here and there, primarily so, you know, it takes a little bit of pressure off the school. If they don't have enough or something like that, then there's some copies here that are available for kids to read too. That's really, we don't really have much coordination, you know, it's fairly independent of each other, I guess you could say.
And so is Johnson County Libraries, are they members of some kind of National Library Association, or is there some kind of national body that helps and guides you, and librarians as a profession are discussing issues between themselves? Is there something
else? So really the only national organization is the American Library Association, ALA. You probably may have heard seen the acronym before. Libraries can belong to it as an organization. I think even, if I remember correctly, even businesses can be like members of the organization. For the most part, I believe in our case, it's been a matter of we've had individual librarians who've been members on an individual basis, their own decision. Otherwise, we just use ALA for things like if we need bookmarks and posters. They make a lot of library-specific materials that way, and so we'll order some of those. There's also a couple different journals we get, like ALA Book List, which have book reviews, recommended reads, things like that, that we use along with a couple other different kind of journals. We also have the Wyoming Library Association, which is all the, you know, the public and collegiate and school libraries can be members of that. Again, either individually or as an entity. In our case, we have a handful of staff who are members of WLA, primarily because it keeps you in the loop email-wise to know about things that are going on in the state. But also, if you want to go to the Wyoming Library Association conference, which we just did at the end of September, then, you know, that helps with the fees and the dues a little bit like that, too. And it's a good way to network with other librarians in the state, especially if you don't get to travel around that much.
Sure. And I think in Campbell County, the Gillette Public Library has, you know, been experiencing quite a lot of challenges. Mm-hmm. In Natrona County, Johnson County, the school district has been had some pressure. I think in mm-hmm. Campbell County, there was a vote about whether they should be members of the ALA, saying that, you know, that they're really only just a sort of a political entity.
I was a little unclear about that, because I can see how they could say, they can make a decision, you know, we as a board won't be members of this organization or whatever. I'm not sure how they can tell the staff that they can't be part of a professional development organization. Maybe that's in their policy somewhere, I don't know. I had read that article, at least one or two of those different articles about that, and it was a little puzzling to me, frankly, because again, our connection with ALA is very tenuous. I mean, and maybe there's some misunderstanding there, but ALA is not dictating anything to us. I mean, everything that we see from ALA, it's their opinion, it's their recommendation, even the books they recommend. I mean, we don't have to get them. If we see a book and say, that's not really a fit for our library, then we won't get it. If we see a book where we go, oh, this is similar to these other books we have that have been checking out a lot, yeah, we should get that one. And sometimes they're helpful too, because they'll have reviews of, you know, if you have a popular book series like John Flanagan's Ranger's Apprentice one that the kids, middle school kids especially, like a lot, if they do a really good review of the next book in that series, we'll read that and go, oh, yeah, that could help us make our decision. But there's nothing that we're required to do or told to do or anything.
So just being a member doesn't mean that they dictate any requirements of you, what you should or shouldn't be shelving, and so on. So what are your criteria for when you
Well, so get a book? We have a couple different policies that regulate that kind of stuff, which anybody's welcome to look at. Mostly in our general policy, we have a section, let me make sure I read the number right, because these are Roman numerals. Section 11 and section 12 deal with collection development and material selection. And it really, you know, there's a long checklist in here of probably 10, 13, 14 different items. And it deals with things like, you know, first of all, is the physical form of the item itself suitable for use in the library, the subject material, reputation significance of the author, the quality, the reviews, the things like that. The demand for the materials is a big one. Demand is actually one of the things that we'll look at a lot, especially over the past, 5-10 years or so. If we've gotten, for example, let's say we've gotten a book by an author we've never heard of before, because we're always trying to look for new authors to see if our patrons will want to read them. So if I'll get a book by a new author and try it, and, you know, year or so goes by, maybe a couple of people check it out or nobody checks it out and just kind of sits there, even though we've kind of put it on the stand with our rest of our new books saying, here's our new reads. Then if the author comes out with the second book, we'll go back and we're like, well, some of the other libraries are getting it. Maybe, you know, the bulk of the public libraries have gotten this book, this second book. But we might go, well, we might be the odd one out because our copy of it just isn't checking out, the first book. So I can't really justify getting the second one if nobody's really going to want to read the first one. And just because we haven't bought it, though, doesn't mean we can't get it. You know, some of those factors are dictated by finances. We only have a finite amount of money, so we can't buy every book that's out there, obviously. But we have a very robust interlibrary loan network that's a voluntary thing among the public libraries and the college libraries, where if we don't have a book, then we can request that book to be mailed to us so that our patrons can check it out, and vice versa. We send out books. You know, we send out hundreds of books each year and take in hundreds of books through this process.
Okay, thank you. That's clear, and I appreciate the insight that you've given us there about how you actually pick books and so on. So a lot of it is also, I assume, just about how well promoted they are, how well, you know, the publishers and the agents and the marketing individuals within those different publishing houses are doing to kind of bring good books forward.
Yeah, and really a lot of it is, you know, big names are a factor, quite frankly. You know, after you spend some time in the library, you know, there's children's authors and teen authors and authors for adults that you get to recognize. And like James Patterson, mm-hmm. for example. We get everything that James Patterson does, pretty much, because somebody is going to read it, whether it's a few people or a lot of people. And we're just like, yep, he's... And that guy can crank out books like crazy.
So I don't know how concerned you are about content and controlling content in different individual books. I mean, so for example, you know, are there books about racism on the shelves, and what would they look like? You know, would they have a particular point of view? What do you do here for those kinds of issues which can be more controversial?
Sure. So content has always been kind of an odd thing, because I feel like controversial content has been more of an issue in the past several years than it's ever really been. Most of the library materials that we try to get, our goal is to be as neutral as we possibly can. So for example, if a political book comes out, maybe I've decided, I don't know if we want to get that one. We've got a huge stack of books. Say we've got 10, 15 books on a particular political topic, and a new one comes out, and it's kind of like, well, I don't know if I'm going to get this one or not. But then somebody says, yes, we'd like you. You know, this is where patron requests and demand comes into play. There may be a book where we said, we'll pass on that one. But then a couple of people say, ooh, are you going to get that one? We'd like to read it. So then we will actually reverse a decision and say, well, maybe we should get it, since we know we have people who are going to want to read it. And then in cases like that, I'll oftentimes go out and try to find like a political opposite book of that to put on the shelf so that we can have those various viewpoints. The main thing is that our goal is to avoid injecting our personal views and tastes into it as much as we can. Now, of course, you know, when we're picking out adult books, I'm a sci-fi guy, and I know there's sci-fi people who read stuff, and there's been more of them reading it. So I'm picking out books that I know I'll like, but also that they will. Same goes for books that are recommended. You know, each of us has our favorite authors and things like that. So we'll interject our personalities into that a little bit. And usually we wind up finding other people who like the books that we like, and it works really well. But when it comes to, controversial content, we do try to have books that are available sometimes regardless of content, because, you know, our role is to have information out there as much as we possibly can for everybody to read. Now, it's not to say we'll buy every single Hot Topic book that comes down the block, again, because of all these factors I've mentioned. But sometimes, you know, if there's a book that comes out and we're like, okay, this is kind of a controversial book, what's our track record been for other books similar to that or approaching that in the past? And we look and we're like, wow, nobody's checking those out. They're just kind of sitting there gathering dust. So then I have to look at, all right, well, again, finite pool of money. Do I want to buy this book that maybe nobody's going to read? And really, that's the biggest thing for me is, like, you know, the finances, and is somebody going to read this book? Now, if somebody wanted to request that book through interlibrary loan or something like that, we could still make that happen. Or if somebody said, hey, you know, are you guys going to, again, are you going to order this one and maybe we decide to pass on it, then we can talk about those factors and figure it in there. So if that helps explain a little
bit. And so you've been with the library a number of years. Yes?
Yeah, about 14 years.
Yes, I thought that it was over 10 at least. Have you noticed a change in reading interest?
So some of it is reflected by the content, I think, and some of it, or influence, sorry, influence is a better word, and some of it is influenced just by people's taste. With books for teens, for example, more books that comes out for teens from the big publishers and even smaller side publishers, you know, there's things like strong language, sex, things like that are popping up more and more in books that are marketed toward teenagers. On the other hand, we've also had lots of parents who are saying, I don't know if I want my kids to read those kind of books. Can you help me find books that don't have that kind of stuff in it? So we know that some kids and parents are okay with reading, you know, various levels of content in the books. It could range anything from parents and kids who are like, no, we just want, like, you know, clean Christian fiction, or one of those phrases, which folks might be familiar with. And other folks are like, no, you know, my kids watch rated R movies with me, so we're good, so we can handle whatever books are out there. The main thing, so that what we'll do is we'll provide resources to various parents. Like, there's different websites like Common Sense Media, which review books in more depth and more detail than any librarian has time to do, and provides things like, you know, ratings on language, ratings on risque scenes and drug use and things like that. Those are some of the big ones they look at. Whereas a lot of book reviewers don't go that in depth, of course. They just give you an overview. They're more looking at the story and the characters, and not necessarily those elements that are there. So we try to provide both those kind of resources, because we know there's both kinds of parents and kids out there who have... It's just like watching movies. They've got different views and values on what kind of things are there. So we just try to make available most of what's out there, I guess. And the main thing, too, is that, you know, with the books that are there, we're putting them out there as an availability. We're not... I know there's been a lot of throwing around the phrase pushing books and things like that. We just kind of stick them out on the shelf. And it's like, well, these are the new books. And it's really a lot of emphasis in our policies and things on putting the rights and responsibility on the families. You know, the families are going to be the best judge to know this is what's right for us, you know, our values, our beliefs as a family. So they're the ones who are the best placed and the best people to enforce this on, enforce is kind of a bad word, reinforce this on their kids. So if they send their kid to the library on their own, their kid knows, mom doesn't want me to bring home this kind of book or this kind of movie, so I shouldn't check it out. That's where we put the onus of the responsibility, is that, you know, these conversations you have with your kids, and quite frankly, most of the kids we have come in the library and with their parents anyway. It's a very much a family-oriented and used place, I think.
Yeah, thank you for speaking to what seems to be an increasingly sexualized world. Mm-hmm. Are there erotic books, or what would be could be described as erotic books in either the children-teen sections or in the adult sections?
As far as I'm aware, not in the children's area. Now, we also have to back up a little bit, because the term erotic book is one that I think requires a little bit of defining. You know, for example, you would say a book like 50 Shades of Grey. That would probably be an erotic book. I haven't read that one personally. Probably it's not on my reading list. But then see, this is where, again, the personal part of being a librarian, we have to divorce yourself a little bit from it. Like, I don't really like 50 Shades of Grey. I'm never going to read it. The idea of reading makes me go, ugh. Okay. But if somebody comes up looking for it, I'm not going to tell them, no, I'm not going to give it to you. I mean, if they want to read it, they want to read it. You know, they're grownups. They can figure that out. Now, if a book has a sex scene in it, or two, at what point does that book become an erotic book? That's really the question that I think has not been looked at in detail. Like, is it one sex scene? Is it two? How risque is it? Is what? I mean, what kind of criteria do you apply to this? If you apply, for example, if you really broaden the definition of, say, obscenity, and say an obscene book is anything where somebody drops the F-bomb, I'm pretty sure we'd have to get rid of about 75% of the adult books in here. Certainly nobody would be able to read C.J. Box anymore. I know it's kind of an extreme example, but really that's the kind of thing that you're looking at. So, I mean, you know, in terms of the children's books, I really don't think there's anything that even approaches that's in there. And again, you'll have to bear with me, because, and I know some people are like, well, how can you not know? It's like, well, okay, the bulk of my career working here has been on the technical services side of thing, which is entering books in the system. But I did mostly adult stuff. The children's crew entered their own books. And as a library director, I'm familiar with a lot of what we had to offer. But I definitely have not read every single book in the building, because we have 40,000 some print items. And even in the children's area, that's a good big chunk of that 40,000. You know, when it comes to the teen books and the adult books, I'm sure there's some books that have like a lot of rated R content in them, but I couldn't offhand tell you which ones or how many or things like that. Because really, when we're purchasing books, again, we're not going through them page by page. It's just not feasible, really. Not when we're purchasing and taking in donations of a couple thousand books every year. I mean, that's, what's that per day? I mean, that's not even counting your weekend days, you know, during your 40 hours during the week.
It's an unrealistic target.
Yeah,
yes.
It is really. But again, that's why we rely on websites like that one that I mentioned to others, because they do have people who go through, especially some of the bigger name books, and rate it by content. And so then the parents can say, looking on the shelf at this book like, ooh, I don't know about this one. And then they can pull up their phones. I mean, you know, because everybody's got their phone, and say the review is like, oh, there's not much in there that my family objects to. Okay, let's give this one a whirl. And others might say, ooh, yeah, no, I don't really want my kids reading that. So then.
So one of the things you mention is that there probably hasn't been a sufficient debate to talk about disentangling what is subjective for each individual as to kind of right. Where they draw the line and whether something is erotic or inappropriate.
So along the lines of that, I'll give you an example from Wyoming state statute, Article 3 that deals with obscenity under, I think it's Title 6-4, 301 under definitions. The third definition under this is obscene. And it says it's material which the average person would find, A, applying contemporary community standards, taken as a whole, appeals to the prurient interests. Love that word, prurient. B, applying contemporary community standards, depicts or describes sexual conduct in a patently offensive way. And C, taken as a whole, lacks serious literary, artistic, political, or scientific value. So just in reading all of those things, they're super subjective, especially now. And the criteria for an obscene material is you have to have all three of those met. So, and really it comes back to, you know, this phrase of taken as a whole. Like I mentioned earlier, you know, if you get rid of that taken as a whole bit and just say, like, any book that is swearing in it, I mean, that's going to knock out even more. I mean, you pretty much only have children's books and a big chunk of the teen books left, because I'm pretty sure the vast majority of adult books have some kind of swearing in them, one way or the other, you know, ranging from PG up to beyond R, depending on who the author is. So I think that that is something that is worth discussing. But the other thing to consider too is that really, and it's kind of a hard topic to tangle with, but you know, people are looking at libraries and school libraries in a way as being the gatekeepers and the ones controlling this kind of stuff, because we're buying the books or people are donating us the book and things like that. Okay, so yeah, we are doing that, but nobody's making anybody check out the books here at the library. If you think a book is not a good book, then you don't have to take it out. And we're not, you know, forcing anyone, like, when they come up to the desk, here's this book, you're going to take it home and read it. You must. The trick is that a lot of the publishers are taking different stances these days on what obviously didn't used to be considered appropriate to put in books for adults or books for teens and things, or even books for children. And so they're shifting their standards on that end. And the trick with libraries is that they've worked so hard to be neutral that suddenly they're confronted with this desire from folks in the community to be censoring, for lack of a better word, or regulating, I guess, but we're not really designed or trained to do that.
So I think, you know, where this becomes a critical issue is probably in the realm of teens, mm-hmm. and, you know, what is appropriate, what is not, and what should, where should the guardrails be for mm-hmm. them? We've talked a lot about books, and I think we're assuming that they're just written words. That's mm-hmm. not true. Mm-hmm. There are many words, especially in the younger categories, mm-hmm. books which are aimed particularly at children, well-known picture books and so on. But that's not exclusively just in a certain age group. That also includes teens too.
Right.
And when there is graphic illustrative material, whether mm-hmm. it's photographic or rendered in some other way, that changes the position too.
Oh, sure.
And how do you navigate the curiosity of young people and the role of adults in helping them be educated and informed, and, you know, where should that begin and where should that end? That is the debate, I think, for society.
Right.
And what happens, and how do you do that, and how do you make sure that books are inclusive, mm-hmm. but not offensive? Mm-hmm. How do you do that, and How do you include information for curious people, whether they're teens or younger or older, even adults, you know, looking at things, for example, the what are regarded as more alternative lifestyles, more alternative ways of living, like, mm-hmm. you know, LGBTQ, mm-hmm. Gender fluidity. How do you put, you know, how do you choose to get those books as sources of information and education
yeah.
That are not propagandist either? How do you tread that path?
So usually when it comes to specifically like those health related type books, we tend to lean toward nonfiction, and we haven't really gotten many of those in the past several years. I mean, and I'm talking even, you know, whether you're talking about heterosexual or homosexual or whichever, just in general, we haven't really gotten that many books. And part of that reason is because, like with most nonfiction these days, it just doesn't check out very much. You know, history, biography, those things, and politics, those things are, you know, very well read, especially here in our library. But things like how-to books, self-help books, religious, what's the word I'm looking for? Devotional-type books, and those sorts of health books, people just don't check them out nearly as much as they do. I, again, picking up my phone here, most everybody is looking online for that kind of information.
Right.
So, and again, it comes back to, we try to look at what we've had and what the community response has been to what we've had. So, for example, if we, now I can't really say off the top of my head what there would be graphic-wise that would be offensive in the way that folks have been discussing. But, you know, if we've had ones like that before and maybe one person's checked it out and then never again, and it's sat on our shelf for 2 years and that's it, I'm not really inclined to get another book, just because, once again, we're trying to look at circulation. We're trying to look at, you know, shepherding our resources that we have, well, our finite amounts of money. And, you know, since this is a small library and a smaller community, we get a pretty good sense of what people want to read. Now, if somebody came in tomorrow and said, you know, there's this fairly controversial book that this other library has, I want to read it, we're going to be like, okay, we can get an interlibrary loan form for that. We can borrow it, check it out to you. No problem. But once again, what we're trying to do is, you know, remind the parents that they have the ultimate say over what their kids read. Not that they have their ultimate say over what other people's kids read, but their own kids. But that informs us too about what things they do want to see. So we're always taking suggestions for, you know, I want this kind of book in the library. I would like to see this kind of author. You get, this might be a good one here. Sometimes people have recommended books to us because they want, you know, the so-called cleaner type material, and we put those out and then nobody checks them out either. So it's like, because you come back, this is where you come back to the more subjective things like cover design and what appeals to the kids and things like that.
And I think category and placement
yeah.
also is instructive. It helps readers and parents, you know, mm-hmm. whether they're both or whether they're trying to, a parent is trying to help yeah. A you know, a younger family member.
Now, as an, books. As an example, we have a couple health type books for boys and for girls aimed at, I think it's older elementary age. I don't remember. And it is done with some illustrations. Now, I haven't looked at this book for a while because we bought it back in like 2018 or something like that. But I remember the circumstances around it, which was we had parents come in saying, hey, we could really use some more resources for our kids for like changes in your body, puberty, things like that. And it was parents of boys and girls. I think it was, I don't know, 3 or 4 families, something like that. I can't remember the entire details because, again, this is 4 or 5 years ago. So the children's staff and the parents both did research, kind of traded notes on, oh, this might be some good books here and things like that. And then we got the books and had them ready to circulate and actually set up a smaller subsection of children's nonfiction, I think, where those books are now shelved, where parents know that they can take their kids and go to get those books. As far as, to my knowledge, we haven't had any kids come in and just kind of grab the books and go look at them, or, you know, most of the parents and the kids are checking out a lot of books together, and so the parents are seeing right away what their kids are checking out. there's not a lot of, you know, I think a lot of people are concerned about kids checking out things and maybe sneaking it from their parents. I don't really see a lot of that. We see a lot of family involvement with the selection of books that they check out, things like that. But that example of the kids' health books, I think, is a good one, because that shows you a little bit of how we make some of those decisions on what books we put in.
Thank you. So we're sort of dancing around an issue. You brought up the word earlier, censorship. Hmm. You know, as I,
and that's a big broad term too.
It is a big broad term, and I did predicate, you know, our conversation was saying that this is not a new issue, that book banning, controlling information and so on has been around with us since the 1600s.
Oh yeah.
What do you, as a seasoned librarian, Steve, what do you see as kind of the direction that we're headed, and what challenges does that bring for libraries?
Well, so sometimes I feel like censorship is a loaded term, depending on how you wield it and who was the one who's carrying it around. I really think that a lot of it comes back to the librarians knowing that there's people in the community. It's like, could people in the community use this book? Do I personally know some people who could use this book? Or do I know of some people who've been asking for this book? Maybe I don't know them personally, but they've come in and requested those kind of things. I think those are the two most important parts.
Okay, so let's think about that, because if you're to use this book, but to what end? So, for example, if there was an anti-Semitic piece, what is the purpose of that? What you say use this book? What do you mean by that?
Well, sorry, for me, when I say use a book, I just mean read it. And, you know, I'll give you an example from not that long ago. We had a middle school girl who came in, and she wanted to come ask. She was a little embarrassed about it. She asked where Mein Kampf was. And we said, yeah, we'll show you where that is. It's over in the nonfiction section. So I don't remember if one of us went with her or pointed it out, depending on how busy we are. Sometimes you can't get away from the desk. But her mom came in while she was looking. And so then when she went to check out her books, she was showing her books to her mom, and her mom was kind of looking through and seeing them. Whether it was for class, whether it was just something the family had been talking about, I have no idea. That's not our role to be that sort of parental element of saying, you know, hey, your kid was checking out this book. I'm not sure that's okay for your kid to check out. That's the parent and the kid's discussion. Otherwise, we're injecting ourselves into the parenting of somebody else's kid. And frankly, the only time we should be injecting ourselves into the parenting of somebody else's kid is if their kid is, like, you know, climbing up a bookshelf and we say, get out, and the parent's not there. That's like more immediate public safety, you know?
And I think what you're also pointing to is that just because you may have read a book does not mean that you subscribe to everything that you have read.
Yeah.
It informs you, and you then decide what you do with that.
Yeah. If your personal values are in place well enough, reading one book is not going to change your mind. I've read plenty of books on topics that I disagree with, and I may pick up an element where I go, I didn't consider it that before, but it didn't change my overall worldview about it, just because I know what my overall worldview is. Now, of course, children and teens are more susceptible because they're still forming their worldview, but again, that's where your parents come in. That's where they can have the conversation with the kids and be like, Mom, I saw this in this book. Why is this character and this character doing this thing? You know, and the parents say, well, we don't agree with that kind of lifestyle or whatever their personal moral values are. But there are some folks out there who live like that. So, I mean, it's not...
And the reality is that...
I'll interject a little bit of myself personally here, too. As an author and a writer myself, I can be fairly libertarian. I don't want to confuse that with the word liberal, because I know that can be loaded. But the word libertarian, when it comes to reading, I mean, reading's not going to hurt you. There's lots of things in books that people will find offensive one way or the other. I mean, a lot of the book that a bunch of us read when we go to church on Sunday can be considered offensive, as some of the content is offensive too. And frankly, when you're trying to explain it to your kids, there's some sections where you turn a little red in the cheeks when you're trying to explain that to your 6-year-old, and you go, Mommy, what's Daddy, what are they doing here? It's like, How do I explain that to a six-year-old? So it's this constant, fluid, changing thing, I feel like. And I again feel like that the thing that we try to do here with our policies is, again, we want to have these conversations with parents. We want to have these conversations with kids and teens. But we really want the parents to be having the conversation with their kids and teens. As I've told other parents before, you know, if there's a book in the library that you're like, I don't want my kid checking this out, then if you have other parents that you know who also don't like those kind of books, that's how word of mouth works with both good and bad books. You're like, ooh, this book really stinks. Your kids wouldn't like it either. But the problem that I see is when you get into a position of when one or two or four or ten people, and I don't know where the cutoff is because I'm just throwing numbers, come into a building that has 40,000 books and say, this one book, nobody should be allowed to read it. Well, you don't get to decide that for everybody. That's not, because there could be people who do want to read it. And where are there, then what happens to their right to be able to read it for free, which is really the whole point of the library? Is to be able to read, get what kind of information you're looking for free. Now, property taxes, donations, whatever, that's besides the point. But in general, you know what I mean.
The availability to you should be free is what you're saying.
Exactly. The whole goal is to have the library be as accessible to everybody that it can be in your community. And there's going to be some stuff you probably won't like. Like I said, you know, I'm not a romance book fan. I really would rather never even look at a romance book, but I'm not a dummy. I'm not going to take romance books off the shelf here because there's tons of people who read them. Whether I like them or not is irrelevant in that case.
So thank you. Very interesting conversation.
Yeah, thank you.
I appreciate you spending some time explaining to us about Johnson County Libraries, mm-hmm. and how you stock your shelves full of wonderful books to read.
Yeah, there's tons. And really, you know, another, and I'll put it out there again, I think I said it a couple different times, we love it when people come in and suggest, hey, you should get this book, I read it, it's great.
Okay.
That's like one of our favorite things in the world. And we actually do have stickers that we put in the books that say recommended by a library patron to help other people see that. Because we as librarians do read books. We can only read so many. And some people have more time to read than we do. So we rely on them to give us tips and hints beyond, even sometimes beyond the catalogs we read, because the catalogs are, you know, they're good resources, but they're impersonal. They're one reviewer's idea about a book. And if I can hear it from somebody else around here, or who's actually read it, that I know, then that's even better.
So thank you. And if you know a good book and you don't think it's on Johnson County Library shelves, or you would like it to be, or you want to check it out, come down to the libraries in KC and Buffalo and take a look and talk to you, Steve, and get that book on the shelf.
Yeah.
Thank you very much indeed for a very interesting conversation. Thank you.